Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, gathering place for the Gentlemen Nerds. The Gentlemen Nerds are three entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about all things nerdy, mostly in the vein of film, television, toys, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned, there are the potential for many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes, or on our website, gentlemennerds.com. Now, enjoy the show. Ladies and gentlemen, I have an announcement. I interrupt this broadcast of the Gentlemen Nerds to bring you a brief weather forecast. Winter is coming. You may now continue. We are here to talk about the Game of Thrones, the most influential television series in probably over a decade. As television series that has entered into our pop culture lexicon and has given us characters that we all know and love, that we followed, that we've agonized with. Well, folks, it's over. It's over. It's done. Game of Thrones has broadcast its final episode, and the reactions are mixed. It's been lauded. It's been applauded. It's been derided. It's been mocked. We are across the board here, folks. But the most important thing is the Game of Thrones, a science fiction fantasy series, which has incredible legs, ladies and gentlemen, has come to an end. And here at the Lobot Lounge, we are going to pay our respects to this long lost and much lamented ending of the series in our own special way. Ladies and gentlemen, gathered here at the Lobot Lounge to talk about the Game of Thrones and all things Game of Throny is Mark Finn.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Aaron DiArrive.
If I were a king, I'd knight you 10 times over.
And I am your host and emotional touchstone who drinks and knows things. I'm Joseph Fotinos. Welcome to the Lobot Lounge and the Gentlemen Nerds wrap up of the Game of Thrones.
What a 6 weeks where, you know what I mean? I actually felt like I was fighting at the wall. I swear to God. Yeah. I spent 6 weeks on Facebook dropping oil on everybody, only at the end to feel like Jon Snow when I'm staring at the guy and he says to me, "For the good of the watch." Oh shit! Is that a dagger in my stomach?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, I will start by saying that Game of Thrones is a remarkable achievement. Absolutely remarkable. You know, Joseph said it best. There is no show that I can think of. You know, I remember when X-Files was really hot. I remember when people were talking about, you know, Twin Peaks and other things like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just the level of devotion and the amount of space that was taken up on social media, talking about the show, the characters, the twists, the turns.
I would say recent years Breaking Bad might be up there with
that. Maybe, but not to the point where, like, you know, go on YouTube and see how many reaction videos you can find to Breaking Bad.
Oh,
not
yeah.
many.
Well, that's true. That's
but,
true.
Oh my gosh, it became a spectator sport. It became like watching, you know, the World Cup or the freaking Super Bowl.
Right.
I think that a great deal of and from my perspective, I thought I was satisfied with the ending, but I was not thrilled with the ending with the last season. And we'll get into all the reasons why.
Well, and ladies and gentlemen, we decided prior to the broadcast that we're not going to summarize the Game of Thrones.
No, we're not going to
go through the details. You might bring up some subjects here and there and some characters and how we felt about it. But we're trusting that everyone who's listening to the sound of our voices has seen the final episode of the Game of Thrones. In fact, seen all of the Game of Thrones and knows what we're talking about here.
So, everything leading up to this last season was pretty phenomenal. And there was discussions on Facebook about the ending, the actual ending. And of course, there's the concept. There was a fan that started an online petition to rewrite the last several episodes. That was, I think, at last count, at least 500,000 strong.
Not only rewrite, but reshoot.
Yeah. They wanted them to remake. They wanted them to redo. Yes. The season, and of course, yes, that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
it is. If I may be permitted to,
the Sichuan sauce is arriving just right here at this table.
Oh yeah, thank you very much. Yes, yeah. We asked for a lot of it, and I know there's people outside who are desperate to get it. if I may be so bold as to offer up a derisive hoot at the notion that that HBO do anything, hoot.
Yes. Right. Yes. No, it is. In fact, it is a ridiculous notion. It is a ridiculous notion. I mean, I'm glad that fans were that committed and that into it. But, you know, I reminded somebody who was posting about, you know, like, oh, fans, you know, it just didn't end the way they wanted it to. And that's their big complaint and yada, blah, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, I don't remember the online petition to undo the beheading of Ned Stark. I don't remember the online petition to undo the Red Wedding. I don't remember the online petition to undo all of these other events, the stabbing death of Jon Snow. I don't remember the online petition for all of the other really sad and tragic and shocking moments in Game of Thrones, because people were not dissatisfied. They might have been wrecked by it. They might have been completely stunned, but ultimately, on some level, they knew that the way those episodes ended made sense. It was almost inevitable. Of course, it was going to go this way. They didn't foresee it. They certainly didn't want it. But to them, there was no complaints, because they were like, "Yep, that's Game of Thrones." So I think if you take those reactions and you contrast it with the vitriol that is being hurled at these last several episodes of the last season, no, something is wrong, folks. It is not just, oh, well, it didn't end the way they wanted it to. No. It goes way beyond that.
It does. It really does. And honestly, if I can challenge us here at the table by asking a generic what-if question. What if there was one more season? What if they spent this season watching Dany go the way she goes and letting her develop into the woman who would Leroy Jenkins the town,
right,
and burn everything at the drop of a hat, or the ring of a bell, if you will?
Right.
What if they let us see that coming and dread it the whole time, going, oh, no, I could see this coming. Oh, my God. No, come on, Dany. Come on, Dany. Instead of just going, what?
Yeah. No.
Well, I would suggest, I don't know that you need a whole season, but I do think that you absolutely needed a full season 7 and a full season 8. And here's why. This tends to be the arc, and I know it's probably, certainly true for, it's true for fiction, and I'm assuming screenwriting as well. That at least as far as I've been able to identify with Game of Thrones, because I power watched it leading up to the last season, and you know, it hangs together really tightly for those first six seasons, and it's because even in the dark seasons, right, 5 and 6, where everything's happening, there's a 3-episode progression for each of the characters. You know, the first part of it is the character gets thrown into a bad situation. You know, Arya joins the assassins. Cersei is imprisoned by the High Sparrow, or, you know, Jon lets the wildlings into the city, you know, into the wall, and everybody hates it. Then the next episode, sometimes 2, is that getting way worse. Arya gets blinded. Cersei is starved and emotionally blackmailed, so much so that we start to actually feel sorry for Cersei, you know, because that would, nobody likes that. We see Theon emotionally abused and physically and mentally abused. We see Sansa forced into yet another marriage to a horrible person. All of these things are in that sort of middle act. And then in the final act, there's the ending of it. You know, she gets to walk home doing the walk of shame. Arya escapes the faceless men, but only by being stabbed in the stomach, you know. And the comeuppance might happen later. It might happen later on in the series as an ending, but there's always that, you know, level one, level two gets it in the neck. Level three comes out of it changed or different. Mm-hmm. And what we have in season seven and a little bit in season seven and a lot in season eight is, oh my God, they've kidnapped my best friend and they just cut her head off at the wall. And then the next beat is, I'ma burn this place to the fucking ground. And there was not that middle act. You know, there was not that middle part where we got to see that happen and everybody reacting to it. Well, so I think you could have spaced all of that out in a normal season, and we would not have had these problems.
I think that you're absolutely correct, sir. Absolutely correct as always. But I will say that I think the beats were there. They were just so rapid fire as to become one beat.
Right.
Danny's sitting at the table after they defeated the Night King with her Starbucks cup, watching everyone applaud Jon Snow and feeling left out and going, wait a minute, I lost a child doing this. And then watching another one of her children get killed, and then watching her best friend, all these things that are building happen like that, you know, so fast, rapid fire, that it doesn't seem like beats.
Right. Well, and that's, I mean, the problem is that, I mean, I actually don't think it could have been handled in just a couple of more episodes. I don't. I think they needed two or three more seasons.
I would say one more season.
No. I mean, if you look at the journey, the arc of every single character in that series, it would be the equivalent of if in one episode we saw Arya going to the docks and showing the guy the coin and saying Valar Morghulis. And the guy saying, oh, you will have a spot on the ship, of course, in the captain's cabin. And then three episodes later, she's leaping from the wall and killing the Night King because she's a badass assassin. Three episodes later. No. There is no way. Even if you said, well, I guess you could give her two, three episodes to become a badass assassin. No, you give her two, three seasons to become a badass assassin.
We used to bemoan the fact that it took so long to get from point A to point B. I remember one of our earlier Game of Thrones discussions, we were like, my God, it's taken them forever to get there. And then later on, they started the fast travel.
Yes.
They really would jump like a video game from point A to point B.
And by the way, I don't mind the fast travel part, as long as they weren't fast traveling the plot.
Right.
And the other problem, because without exception, and folks, there's lots of articles. My God, just Google, you know, was Danny always this horrible tyrant? And you'll get all kinds of hits on and opinion pieces on why people think, well, there was this and this and this. The problem is all of the things that they point out that were indicative of Danny becoming or could be this mad person was in the context of Game of Thrones absolutely not unusual. They were talking about Dany in those decisions she makes in those episodes as if they were talking about, you know, Superman in the DC universe. No, this is Game of Thrones. When she crucifies slavers, when she burns misogynistic cows that were intending to rape her and kill her, when she executes people that she has said, I'm giving you a way out, pledge your loyalty to me, and you're free men, you know, when all those actions are taken, it is not the marks of a madman. On Westeros, the monarchs call that Tuesday. And so she is not acting in any way, shape, or form in a way that would cause us, the audience, because mind you, we are the judges. We're watching what the show has. We're watching the typical actions of monarchs. We're told about the typical actions of monarchs. And then we see what Danny does. And we're going, yup, that sounds about right. In fact, she seems kind of cool compared to some monarchs. She released the slaves. When one of her dragons burned a little girl, she locked them up. She was worried about trying to feed the people once she had freed them. She's trying to defend them from the slavers coming back and taking over again. She destroyed.
There was always this commentary after each one of these, like, you know, retributions, right? Whether it's whether Tyrion or Varys or both or somebody else would always pull her aside and go, okay, that's like what everybody else does, you know, try to be a little better about that. And right. She goes, what else can I do? You know, I want to free the world. And that was, that's a laudable goal.
It is. And by the way, and I think that with television, you know, subtlety has its place, but if you really want to sell this, you have an entire season of Danny not only just making questionable choices, and by the way, all of those incidents that people use as proof of how bloodthirsty she was are not at all indicative of a monarch, of a tyrant, or a mad woman. You show her actually struggling with that instinct. You show her descending into madness, and she knows it. She knows it. She's holding on to her head. She understands it's coming, and she's trying to fight it. And then the audience is with her. They are with her on the descent to madness. You don't get outrage. You get all of us going, oh my God, exactly what Joseph said. Oh my God, we knew this was coming. And it's inevitable. And we see it and we lament it and we say, but my God, we can't question it. Because look, remember that in that one episode, she went off a little bit and Varys and Jon and Tyrion talked her down. And afterwards she was in her chambers and she's pacing and she's just, you can see there's something wrong with her and she can't quite express what it is. And Varys, seasons before this last one, leans over to Tyrion and said, it's happening again. Not one episode later and Varys is sending out a bunch of notes saying, oh, she's mad, I tell you. No, he knew seasons before, oh my God, it's happening again.
Yeah, so we knew she was mad, but she was in her room.
Build it up, even if you have to be a little on the nose, yeah. Even if you have to be a little obvious. I mean, I wouldn't say have her hear voices or whatever, right. But she's descending into madness. Give us that. So by the time she gets with John and John stabs her, it's as much a release for her. And almost like she's glad now that this is over as it is for the audience. They're like, she's at peace now. She is at peace because we know she was going to go down the same path as her father. We knew it. We saw it. Two seasons ago, we saw it. So this is my big rant, folks. I do not agree with people who say the signs were all there. Bullshit. They were not. Her actions were no different, and in some cases, much more merciful and kind and measured than the average Westerosi monarch. And so, no, the signs were not there. Maybe they were hoping those people would say, well, that's a sign, see? She burned a bunch of slavers. Really? So would I. But she killed all those calls, all those innocent calls that were threatening to rape her and kill her. She burned them alive. So would I. I'm not mad. I don't even have 1/8 blood Targaryen. So don't use what stuff that's in the show to make your point when it actually doesn't make your point. It makes the opposite point. So I don't mind that she went mad. I really don't. I think that's a fantastic way to go with the character. But don't give it lip service. Don't give it a couple of episodes of her suddenly going, woohoo, 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 and she's cuckoo. No, show us that. Give us the same journey that we saw Jaime go on to transform him, that Arya went on to transform her, that the Hound went on to transform him. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, everybody went on their own journey. Everybody had their own arc. Dany was robbed. Dany was robbed. And that's why people are unhappy.
I was more, I didn't mind it so much. Because I was really willing to see where they go. You know, part of my problem with all of it and part of the reason why I was online losing friends and influencing enemies was that despite the quickening of the pace to breakneck speed, I really wanted to watch the whole thing in toto. Because I had a hunch, and someone kind of mentioned this, and I thought, yep, that's probably exactly what happened. I had a hunch that they, at some point in the process, when they ran out of stuff from the books, said, okay, what do we want this to look like at the end? How, what do we want to get this to? And so they wrote a scene or made a list of characters that they wanted to survive and kind of where they would end up. And then they said, okay, let's write this in reverse. They basically reverse engineered the ending so that everybody that they like would end up there. And so while I was perfectly content to have the battle of the battle for Winterfell, the Long Night happen in one long episode, of course I would have preferred it to be two. And the cliffhanger would have been the reappearance of the Night King, right? That's where your cliffhanger is. But anyways, as much as I would have liked to have all this stuff spread out, I was willing to wait to see where they ended up. And what I hated more than anything was the fact that Jamie spends the entirety of the series overcoming his better self. And finally ends up with certainly somebody that has seen him for who he was, even when he couldn't. And you're thinking, wow, cool, that's a great place for him to end up. And it would suck if Brienne died or whatever, you know, because that would be the where I'd go with it. I'd give him a brief glimpse of happiness and then take away that happiness. But instead, he defaults back to the abusive, controlling, manipulating relationship without so much as a buy your leave. And I really had a problem with that. The yo-yo.
Why? Because it was a betrayal of Jamie. So yeah. Again, it if you are not serving the arcs that we have been following for many seasons, then yes, fans are going to get angry. Fans are going to be unsatisfied. The other problem too, by the way, is that, and again, George R. R. Martin was going to end this however George R. R. Martin was going to end it. But, you know, by having the Battle of Winterfell happen first, by having the big threat, by the way, that they've been building to since season one, and then suddenly going, oh yeah, by the way, we got to go take King's Landing. That would be like in The Lord of the Rings. If they had the War of the Ring, they destroyed the ring, they defeated Sauron, and then went, but we got to do something about Saruman. Yeah, we should probably go to Isengard. And take care of that.
Is that the same thing as
it's like, no, we're done. We're done.
The last Jedi and taking Snoke out and then going, who?
Yeah. Like, and by the way, bad? now they just replaced him with the Emperor.
Yeah, but anyway. I mean, I'm saying he was the big bad, and then suddenly he's gone. No, we're done here. Okay, great.
Think of the possibilities, you know. And again, now we're going into pure speculation territory, which
but we
which
do normally, know that George R. R. Martin gave that ending to them.
He did.
That's his ending.
That was
folks.
An outline that was provided by Martin.
How they got
to
there
the showrunners.
Was their own thing,
but you know, imagine in a world where the Battle of Winterfell is not going well. They are forced to flee. They have to go back. They have to go to King's Landing with the Army of the Dead marching after and the Night's King march coming after them. And they're now at King's Landing trying to fight him off. And now Cersei decides, they're all in the castle. Now is the time for me to take them out. So while some people are trying to deal with the Night King and this horde of undead, other people are being, Cersei's marching King's guards into certain people's rooms, battles are happening, she's trying to kill Dany. I mean, it's like you could have had a completely amazing, different, but amazing ending of like, oh my God, we knew she was going to pick the worst time to make her move because she's Cersei. They would have all been in the same place. So Jamie would have been there to confront her with Brienne, with everybody else. The Hound would have been there. The Mountain would have been there. I mean, all the elements are there. It just seemed to me anticlimactic to go from the Battle of Winterfell and defeating the big bad, defeating Thanos, defeating Sauron, defeating the Emperor, to going now and taking care of, which, by the way, as the episode showed us, all you need is a dragon. You don't even really need an army. You just need a dragon that at that point is now protected by plot armor. So scorpions, what scorpions? They're useless, which was, again, ridiculous. In one scene, dragons are about as fragile as tissue paper when they're confronting scorpions. And in the very next episode, one dragon can pretty much, it's like Hiroshima, can wipe out this entire city. Make up your mind. Which is it? They're fragile or they're invulnerable?
I'll offer a counterpoint on that. The tactic of putting the sun at their back is a dogfighting trick that they used, through all of the 20th century. And I actually didn't mind that because I liked the idea of Dany witnessing the death of both of her sons and also witnessing him taking fire and getting hit and then dodging. I like the idea that she would adapt to those tactics. I like that. I didn't mind that.
And to your point, they did make a very definite moment of Euron Greyjoy, my man, looking up into the sun, putting his hand up and saying, what is that? To point the fact out that she's diving in with the sun behind her.
Yeah.
And that he couldn't see her until the last moment when she was on them. Plus, you could logically say when they were flying to Dragonstone, it was a sneak attack. They didn't see it coming, regardless of whether or not she should have, because she was in the air and they were in the water. Regardless, it was a sneak attack. This time, it's not a sneak attack. She knows she's going in and she's going to kill everyone. And so she's going in with the sun behind her. She's going to, you know.
Again, it could have, but.
It could have. Rather. Honestly, guys, personally for me, I was fine with it. Let me say it personally for me. You had your thing. My thing is, okay. It ends the way it ends. Great. My dragon show didn't go exactly the way I wanted it to go. That's okay. It all ended the way it should have, because here's what I concentrated on. Here's my takeaway from all of that. Dany won. How did she win? She did break the wheel and reinvent it. She did. She did exactly what she said she was going to do. When they all sat around and talked about what's best for the people, and instead of taking up swords and the guy who's the strongest gets to be king, that was the wheel being reinvented, and Dany broke that wheel. I think that was exactly the way it needed to end. I wouldn't have put Bran on the throne, but regardless, whoever's on the throne, that's great. It wasn't like Robert Baratheon with this big hammer coming smashing things, going, "Well, I'm king now because I've got the biggest hammer."
Right.
You know.
Well, but again, it wasn't the ending. It wasn't the ending that sucked. It's how they got there that sucked. They could have made all of those same wonderful decisions, and it could have been the same conclusion where people were like, that's satisfying. You know, Dany, despite her madness, oh my God, poor thing, she had to be killed. But look, she did what she set out to do. She broke the wheel. So again, I don't mind that it ended the way it did. The plot went the way it did. Mm-hmm. It was just so sloppy and was handled so clumsily and honestly in probably the most cliche way that it could have been handled when none of the rest of the show went that way. None of the rest of the show prepared us. Like, that's the thing. If this were a different show, if this were Xena or Hercules or some other show, then it would have been like, oh, that was fun. But that show, unfortunately, trained us to hold fantasy to a higher standard.
Yeah, and I was expecting more personal grief out of it. You know, I mean, I'm sorry. You know, in the grand tally, right? I'm sorry that Jamie didn't learn his lesson. I hate that the Hound had to die so that the Mountain could die. But I understand it.
Right.
And. Yeah, that was pretty much it, because I didn't have to mourn anybody else. Bronn never had to make a choice, despite teasing that wonderful bit of mayhem. Brienne got everything she wanted except Jaime, and honestly, you know, they were never going to work anyways. You know, yeah, well, what is it about the bad boys? Tyrion gets to keep his head even though he's lost his family, his the family that he builds for himself is still alive. You know what I mean? Like there's a like oh look, Pod's head of his house, Gendry's head of his house, Sir Robin of the Vale has gone full on Neville Longbottom. You know, this whole thing is very. It was the word that I would use if I was reading this in a critique group is it's a little precious. Now
it was all tied up in a bow,
and especially since it spent, you know, like some of the things that people had problems with leading up to it, I didn't. So that was why I felt kind of hypocritical hitting the end of it and going, but
yeah,
there is one thing I think that we can all agree on. Now we know that there's three things in development. They've already said that one of them is going to be the history of Westeros prior to Robert's Rebellion. And that by all accounts could be great because we have different stakes for that. And he wouldn't say what the other two projects are, but if one of them is not the sea voyage adventures of Arya Stark in the Wolf Rider ship, I'll eat my hat.
I think you should eat the hat because they've already said
that they said they're not going to do spinoffs. Yeah, they're not going to do any spinoffs. They're all going to be prequels set in different time periods. You know, we might see Valyria, we might see old Valyria, but they're not going to do any spinoffs with any of the current characters.
Do you want some crystal hot sauce for your hat, or are you just going to eat it like that?
I like the rooster sauce.
Okay, there we go. We will put plenty of rooster sauce.
Are you sure they?
I'm pretty sure the guy at the head of HBO said they're not going to do spinoffs. That they've ruled out direct spinoffs.
Disappoints me on a number of levels because I hate going back in time. I have no interest of learning anything about Westeros before the events of what we are. It's like the prequel trilogy for Star Wars. I don't care. I know how this is going to go. I know Palpatine's going to get up there. I know what's going to happen. Is it interesting? I guess. But I really don't care to see the First Men and the fairies and the Night King again and all that. I just don't care.
Yeah.
You know, then
I really have to call shenanigans on this because why the hell would you keep Jon Snow alive?
I know.
For 7.5 seasons, he has been the most lovable idiot on the show.
He really is.
Yeah, yeah.
He is his dad's kid through and through. He's noble to a fault. He's trusting to a fault. He does the right thing, even when, and sometimes especially if it's the wrong thing. He always makes the worst choices for the best of reasons. And that's his character. It's been his character. I mean, even after he died and got brought back to life, he didn't change. He didn't listen. You know, he's been the most stubborn character of them all. Determined, not focused, stubborn. You know,
which by the way, talk about unhappiness on the part, dissatisfaction on the part of the fans. If you had had a situation where Danny was taken out. Mad Danny, I'm fine with that, was taken out by somebody else, be it Cersei, be it whoever, and John is more mourning her, you know, and John is an act. Now John realizes, I do want to achieve her dream, and he looks up at Drogon, and he points to the Iron Throne, and he says, Dracarys, and Drogon blasts the throne. That already, just in those 5 seconds, I've made the show better. I've made Jon Snow better. Now he is active. He is an active protagonist. He is taking charge. He's like, there is no more Iron Throne. I don't want it. Burn it, Drogon. Then he takes Dany's body. He gets on Drogon and off they go to parts unknown. The last Targaryens are gone. Much more fitting end than, although I'm happy for him to go and bottom for Tormund for many decades. I want to see that show on a different channel. A very, very happy Tormund with a delicious little Jon Snow. But anyway, I think that people are reacting and are unhappy because ultimately the ending was unsatisfying. Yeah. You know, it ended. I'll give it that. It ended. But did it end with a bang? No, it ended with a fizzle.
Let's focus on the happy. Let's talk about what we did like.
Uh-oh.
Because I want to say that I liked that last scene of the small council, of them all sitting around there and going through the Master of Coin requests this and the Master of Ships requests this.
That was cute.
I thought that was... And then the book. Here's a book. It's called The Story of Fire and Ice or Snow and Fire.
Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah. Oh, what part do I have in it? Yeah, you're not really in it. You know, I liked that scene. Yeah. It was nice to see Brienne as captain and Bran being pushed around by Podrick in his armor. And I liked that they gave Bran a seat on the council. I liked that they, of course.
Yeah, the fact that the Knight of Master of Coin makes no sense.
Well, he has a lot of money. He paid the whole series. They kept giving him gold. But, you know, yeah, that was a bit of a stretch. I liked that the Onion Knight was the Master of Ships, made sense.
You did.
I liked that, Samwell was the new maester. Great. Perfect. Yeah. Although, did he have to go back to maester school since he left, or did he just say, I'm a maester now?
I think the king probably has the right to make him a full-blown maester and say, hey, you're probably as learned as you need to be.
Sure.
Knowing that it's Sam, he's probably going to continue studying and reading.
I like that.
Westeros has a Raven degree program.
Nice.
You send the Raven in and they send back your test results. So, from King's Landing, he's got an advantage. You know,
I liked Brienne of Tarth finishing up Jaime's story in the book. I thought that was touching.
No, there certainly were some good moments. Yeah. There were some good moments.
Clegane Bowl, I liked that. I enjoyed watching them go at it with a beautiful background of the dragon flying in the sky and things falling and bricks and fire and that was the final battle we deserved between those two.
Hats off for the spectacle, right?
Yeah,
I got to watching as soon as they started really doing them, the little featurettes. Where they talk about, here's what we went into. And every time they'd show the digital wipe of what they were dealing with and then what they put in, it's just seamless. And on the rewatch, I'm looking for it. And honestly, man, they really, it's funny because I started right after this, I immediately jumped over to Deadwood because that is a writer's delight. The Deadwood movie's coming up and I wanted to be caught up. I actually had never seen the third season. Mm. But I know why they canceled Deadwood, right? Well, because it was so expensive, all the horses. And I'm like, you guys didn't really learn much of a lesson because let me tell you something.
Right.
Westeros was Deadwood with dragons is what it was, Right. I find it fascinating that all of a sudden there really isn't a budgetary concern because, and of course HBO is on record as saying, we'll give you what you need for this. It's going to be hard. Whatever the dissatisfaction will be, the grumbling will die down and that series will stand as a testament because we're talking about something, as you said in the beginning, it was a game changer. It certainly borrowed on the goodwill generated by Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings trilogy in that, hey, you can take something and you can adapt it for another medium, but you can also stay true to the spirit. Uh-huh. And so, because of that, we got Outlander on Stars. We got Westworld back on HBO. There's been an upping of level of both historical dramas and fantasy based and science fiction based shows on all of these premium channels and streaming services.
I mean, the Wheel of Time is coming.
Watchmen.
I mean, for that
His Dark Materials.
For that matter, The Lord of the Rings is coming as a series on Amazon.
Good Omens on.
There is no doubt. And again, which is why, if you want to say, don't we have anything good to say? We do.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones is a remarkable achievement. I don't know that it will ever be matched. And I do think the unhappiness is just because it was such a remarkable achievement. Mm-hmm. A lesser show, people would not have cared that much about. It would have been a couple of articles the day after the last episode, and that would have been it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it Game of Thrones has upped the ante for what audiences will accept as a believable fantasy world, believable characters within a fantasy world. And by the way, which in turn was influenced by the Lord of the Rings movies, you know, that upped the ante for fantasy movies, fantasy characters, fantasy plots, arcs, emotions, themes. You know, this stuff continues to build on itself. And so I'm looking forward to see what all of these shows, you know, are bringing to us.
It's sad that it's done, but I also, I gotta say, and I don't mean this, pejoratively, I'm glad it's over. You know what I mean? Because now I can look at other stuff and there's other things happening.
Yeah. And there will be other things coming. There will be bigger things, totally. I think. And we will be. I mean,
and by the way, the HBO guys can change their minds about spinoffs. Yeah. Right now they're saying no spinoff because I think right now there's a backlash.
Yeah.
But they can change their minds. I wouldn't be surprised, Mark. Don't quite eat your hat yet. I wouldn't be surprised if a year, 2 years down the road, we hear that there might be a show about Arya exploring the West.
I would like them to go in different directions and do something new and not necessarily even in the Game of Thrones universe. Because let's talk about our buddy George R.R.R.R.R. Martin, because there was speculation and some rumor that he actually had written the rest of it or had written at least a couple more books, and HBO said, "Don't release them yet, please. Wait till we finish. Now you can release them."
Yeah, I don't know if I believe that rumor. I think he's taken such a hit on it with his fans for not delivering the books on time.
Oh God, yes.
And I just think he's busy. He's a busy guy. He's developing not just Game of Thrones shows. He's developing shows on based on other properties, some his, some other novels that he is a fan of and has brought to various networks. So,
you're a writer. Let me ask you. You write this series, it gets really good response. A major network like HBO comes knocking on the door and says, "We want to make this into a series." And you go, "Absolutely." And they go, "Here's dump trucks of cash. Just back it up to the door, right, one after another. We're going to keep this going for 8 seasons, great, right, or 7, however it was.
Right.
Super duper. Are you going to go, "I really feel the urge to tell that story." Or are you going to say, finish that story. Or are you going to say, "I'm going to write something else, and I'm going to go, hey, I got another idea, guys."
Yeah.
And they're going to go, "We'll buy it."
Yes.
Whatever it is, because they could put your name on it, from the man who brought you Game of Thrones, Aaron D'Arrive, comes a new series.
No, absolutely.
You know, the Pumpkins of Glory or whatever.
I am not in any way, shape, or form blaming George for the decisions that he is making.
Isn't that the goal?
Yes.
Okay.
George is in a position right now as just a creator and somebody who marshals these things into production. And I'm just like, go, George, man. Yeah. Go, George.
Yeah, Wild Cards is in development. And I can't wait to see what they do with Wild Cards. That's one of my favorite shared world anthologies of all time. So,
I don't know that.
Yeah, no, I'm not the guy that throws shade on George about anything. The fact that he hasn't finished his books, nothing. George is an amazing creator and writer and fantasist, and I want him to continue to do exactly what he wants to do. That's not, you know, all of the failings and all of my complaints about Game of Thrones, the series, fall squarely on the shoulders of the showrunners and HBO. It has nothing to do with George. So, but, you know, two different mediums, you know, in the same way that, you know, every time they ask Stephen King, you know, "Well, what did you think of when they turned this book into a movie and that book?" He says, "Well, if you didn't like it, read the book." You know?
Yeah.
Whereas
that used to be our respite, right? Because when they would do something, they would inevitably get it wrong, you know, and there was always the exception to the rule, right? And I'm thinking specifically of Stephen King and The Shining. You know, that movie is basically, you know, the plot synopsis of the book, and then the rest of it, Stanley Kubrick scaring the hell out of us.
Right, which is funny because King actually doesn't like The Shining as an adaptation of his book, but he actually thinks The Shining is a pretty good movie.
And that's the thing. And so right now we're kind of in this weird sort of liminal space where people have finally cracked the code on how to translate Stephen King into a movie medium, which is something that's always eluded people. And I think it's because, you know, when this was all happening in the 80s and in the early 90s, we didn't have the vocabulary. There wasn't anybody to show us what that looked like. And so, you know, now that that door has been kicked open, and not just kicked open, but propped open, we are now in a situation where, as a community, and as media consumers, people don't mind when there's a deviation. Mm-hmm. Walking Dead fans are thrilled because they've got the TV show, which is its own thing, and they've got the comics, which everybody, there's nobody complaining, right? There's always one guy in the room going, well, he didn't show up until much later in the series. And then everybody kind of looks at him and he goes, but I like what they did in the show. And then the people go back to talking about the show, you know? And so I just think that's, I think that's interesting and really cool because, you know, the comments, in the wake of the ending, other than the general dying down of, well, the ending was pretty good, I guess. Then there was also this like, well, here's the other good thing. Now you've got all these books to read. And I don't know if it'd be interesting. I don't know if there is going to be a spike in the book sales. It'd be cool if there was, even if there was just a 10-15% bump. Right. So these are,
well, but people will probably read it to see if it ends better. I think they will. I think they will seek out the books where normally maybe they would not.
Right. I don't know. That's a tough call though, too, because it's almost like, you know, we've been here, we've done that. Let's move on to the next big thing. The next thing is going to be catch our attention as big fans
will want.
Well, that's some deep seated fans. Yeah, that's the deep seated fans. And I just think that as a whole, it's never going to get as popular as the books were when the series was on, and everyone was reading the books to catch up, and you're learning all these characters. And then true. When the books ended, they only had the show. That's all they had, and now the story has ended. So,
by the way, you brought up a good point, Mark, that I want us to talk about briefly. You know, the reaction of how much power should the fan base in today's pop culture have to affect entertainment like this? There are people who, and they tend to be much more on the creator side, are like, hey, screw you, hippie. This is a work of art. You look at it, you judge it, you move on. You don't like it, you go look at something else.
Yep.
And then there are the people that create the media that don't look at it like that at all. They're not making art. If you ask the Disney top executives, they're not going to say, oh, well, yes, we're puff, puff, we're making art. No, they're making a product. They're making product that they want to sell billions of dollars worth of copies and shares. Right. They could give a shit about art. And so the people ultimately who have the money are the ones who decide what gets made and what doesn't get made. And
well, let me go first and answer your question.
They listen to the fans. First. I mean, Disney has the DC Universe has proven that they listen to the fans. Star Wars has proven that they listen to the fans. So clearly the fans have that power, but go ahead.
Snakes on a Plane proved that they listen to the fans.
Yeah.
I think that I think ultimately that it should never be up to the fans. Now, that's not to say that you can't listen and go forward with your next thing, but I don't think you get a vote as a fan over what should have been done or
not over what's already been done. But you do think that fans should be able to weigh in on the future of a franchise?
Well, because I think it's impossible for them not to. Okay. And so with that in mind, you know, keeping in mind that this will always be a friendly dictatorship and you get your say, maybe, and it's just as a collective voice, you know, 51% of you think that we need, you know, more of X in Y property. And, so we'll listen to you, but I as a creator, Disney as a corporate Frankenstein, are under no obligation to listen to the fans. And I think
obligation, no, that's absolutely true. I would agree with that. Obligation, no. But do they listen? Do you think they actually listen?
I think that they can't help it because social media and Twitter is the tire fire that it is. And right. people always like a good train wreck, especially when the clown car's on fire and the giraffes come tumbling out, you know. And so anytime somebody, quote unquote, gets it wrong, every marketing person and every advertising analyst that Disney employs, or Warner Brothers, or every publicist that works for Random House, they all look at what the online reaction is, because it's one of the only things that they can look at. So I think that that chatter is empty calories. You know, the petition thing has worked one time. It worked for Star Trek, and it hasn't ever worked since. And the boycott has never worked. And in fact, there's always the pushback of, I'm not going to read this. And part of our oppositional defiant disorder that defines the American characteristic is, as soon as somebody tells me you can't watch this because it's obscene, or because somebody said something that they shouldn't have said, my first reaction is, oh yeah, watch me watch it. Or, oh yeah, where can I get a copy?
Yeah, so, no, that kind of boycott I agree with. However, I would argue that it was backlash. It was fan backlash that caused, in my opinion, what would otherwise be an amazing and fantastic Star Wars movie that I think everyone should see, caused Solo to be declared a failure, and for Disney to suddenly cut a bunch of projects that they were developing, that they suddenly went, okay, I guess we're not going to do that. And some would argue that without the fan backlash against Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman,
The Mummy,
we never would have gotten Wonder Woman. We never would have gotten Shazam. You know, we never would have gotten Aquaman without fans saying, no, this is not DC. This is not fun. We do not like these movies. There might not have been a course correction.
And there was definitely a course correction. You're absolutely right there. I would also, again, I'm the emotional touchstone here. I'm going to look at the bright side. That's what I do, folks. I believe that art and profit are not mutually exclusive. Right. That you can have both. Yes, Disney is the Frankenstein monster and it's lumbering through the countryside. But along the way, it's making some pretty good memories and creating some pretty good stuff. And the artists that are involved under that umbrella, I think, are doing amazing things. So I personally look at it as the ability for us to enjoy, oh my God, did I just see Guardians of the Galaxy? That's amazing. Never in my lifetime. I wouldn't imagine that. That's going to be happening. That's great. But at the same time, you know that they're milking that. You know they're pulling up a stool and they're just going to town on it. You know this. We're not stupid. We know hidden inside Mickey's white glove is an iron fist. That's the way Disney works. Always has. Right. You know, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to enjoy it. Boy, I tell you, I'm going to go see Aladdin this weekend. I'm thrilled. I know it's a cash grab, but I like the story and it looks cool. And Will Smith makes me laugh. You know, I'm good with that. It's not going to ruin my memories of the original animated Aladdin or the, you know, Arabian Nights story, if I ever read that. Where we are right now in our pop culture love of all things nerdy that we talk about here in the Lobot Lounge, we live in a pretty good time, folks.
Yeah.
We really do. I mean, enjoy what we got. God knows I don't want it to go away. And I certainly don't want the dredges and the desert that used to be, you know, the mid-90s. Please.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, the genie's out of the bottle. I think there is no going back. We do live with an embarrassment of riches. Mm-hmm. But I also think, however, that it is important for fans to engage. And I'm not talking, you know, at that vitriolic, really just, you know, damaging level. Mm-hmm. You can't help that. There's going to be always those voices. But I think if audiences, and by the way, I wish people, and I think we're seeing more of that. I wish people praised a show as often as they slam a show. A lot of times they'll see something that they like and they say nothing more about it. They only speak up when something bad, when they see something they don't like.
Right.
So I think we're going to get more quality movies as long as fans keep, you know, responding. And by the way, one would argue that the way they show their appreciation is by having, you know, Endgame be the first movie to hit 1 billion in record time. That is the fans saying, we approve. you vote with your wallet. But I think there's a happy medium. I am not one of those that says, fans should shut up and take what they're given. No, I think fans absolutely must engage with the media that they consume. They must opine, they must talk, they must have discussions, they should do YouTube videos, they should get online, because I think this only shows the creators of that content that that hunger, that desire is out there, and that encourages them to keep going. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Marvel did not become what it was after its first movie. You know, Marvel had to keep proving itself over and over and over again, and did so wonderfully, to where now Marvel's almost like Pixar, right? You can't imagine that Pixar makes a movie and it's not going to be good. Mm-hmm. And so I think Marvel, especially under the leadership of Kevin Feige, has hit that, you know, Marvel's going to be out with a new movie. Well, of course I'm going to go see it.
I hear what you're saying, and I'll just add this one thing. And I know that we're getting the stink eye from the big red robot over there.
Oh, but Jesus God. He sure. Thank you. I didn't notice him there.
Let me just say that I think that everything that you said, I agree with, provided that conversation is from the point of view of, let's talk about what this is. I have always been uncomfortable with the deluge of fan fiction that poured out of Harry Potter fandom from people who were just dissatisfied because Harry and Hermione didn't end up together, or Draco didn't kiss Professor Snape on the mouth, or whatever the thing that they thought was going to happen didn't happen.
Right.
And so they went ahead and wrote their own thing for it. And I find that to be a little discomforting, because her prerogative is how this book ends. Right. And the idea that, that you can circumvent that narrative and create your own is the thing that makes me wonder, you know, out loud, why you even read it. Why don't you just write your own thing where two people get together and kiss? Because, you know, you're clearly your disappointment steps on authorial intention. And then secondly, this presumption that not only now that I've written this new treatise on all of the Harry and Ron and Hermione adult erotic scenes that were left out of the seven books, that you can now go back and reinsert between each book to see how it all fits together in an erotic way. Now that I've written that, that's somehow valid. And that's my biggest problem with that presumption, because I think a lot of this this should have been what happened, and I didn't like how they did this. That's more the tone that I'm conferring. You know, I agree some things could have been done different, and I agree that I probably came up with a couple of good ideas, and you ran off with a couple right here. But at no point in time are you and I going to sit down and try to fix Game of Thrones and write a script with all the stuff they got wrong and do it our way. And
right.
That's that kind of there is where the breakdown occurs for me, and that's the line that I'm not willing to cross or entertain.
Would you say that here, excuse me for interrupting real quick.
But no, go ahead.
They don't. What's to stop them from writing a version of the Ron and
yeah, are you saying Snape that story? I need to throw away my Jon Snow and Tormund slash fiction?
Well, definitely not.
Why not look at it?
Definitely not.
Why not look at it? Because I'd like to read it. Why not look at it, with emotional touchstone eyes and think of it as inspiration and creativity? And yeah, it's like fan films, okay? Like fan films.
But that's a very valid point, Joseph.
There are people out there who do these amazing fan films with inspiration, with Batman fighting the Predator, or
Star Wars. My God, there's so many Star Wars fan films.
Let me fix Star Wars and do this and put it out there. Doesn't erase what's out there. Doesn't erase the actual product, but it's inspired. And this guy or gal who went and did all this, that's they probably have a pretty good future in the in an industry of some kind, in a creative industry, right. Inspired totally. By that. Yeah. And to that end, I'd say write your asses off.
Yeah, create, no, that is absolutely that's a great point, and I love it. But I think the difference is, I can only respond to what you specifically invoked. Those Star Wars fan films are people coloring in a different part of the tapestry. Those fan films, the great Boba Fett movies where they have Boba Fett chasing after guys, you know, these continuing adventures, that's hitting a vein that's untapped because we don't have a lot of Boba Fett material. And so here's a cool little adventure that happens before all this stuff goes down, has a different tone than I rewrote the ending the way I wanted it to be.
Well, but there's still, by the way, there are still online, you can find, I've watched many of them.
Yeah.
Recuts of the prequels,
the Obi-Wan Darth Vader fight from A New Hope was redone with fancy footwork and acrobatic leaps
fighting. And here's the thing. I think maybe what you're trying to get to, Mark, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that if it is serving to inspire you, if it is serving to encourage your creativity, to help you at some point launch into perhaps your own idea, your own property, your own IP, then by all means, as long as it's not entitling you in some way claim this part of this IP is yours to do with as you wish.
Nail on the head.
Yeah, yeah. That is different. Okay. You're right. Yeah. It's the entitlement of this is mine. That I think you're objecting to, not, hey, you know what? I didn't much care for the prequels, but I recut them and you should check them out. You should see what I did.
Yeah.
That's different.
Talking about Sandy Carolla's Batman Predator alien awesome mashup thing, which is just, you know, which he basically did as a sizzle reel, right? It's his demo, and I like this stuff, so here's what I'm going to do. Or, you know, in the case of I really love the Mandalorian armor, let's show all the stuff on the Boba Fett armor that we didn't get to see in the movies and have him do a bounty hunting sequence. That's inspirational. And that's, you know, I love this thing so much. I want to do my version of this particular thing. It's that there's no entitlement in there. These people who are doing this, one of my favorites is Troops, the Cops parody with Stormtroopers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So perfect, you know, and granted that guy got a job at Lucasfilm, but he didn't make it to get a job at Lucasfilm. And so he loved this.
Yeah. He just thought, you know, I saw at Star Wars, a recent Star Wars fan film that I thought was beautiful. It was based on a comment that George Lucas made during the makings of for the original trilogy. And it's the scene after the Rancor's killed and the guy comes in and he's looking at it and they're crying. And George Lucas and they have George Lucas saying the line at the end of the fan film, that, you know, everybody in Lucas's opinion, everybody has somebody that they love. You know, the Rancor's keeper loved him and the Rancor loved his keeper.
Cute.
And this fan film is called like Birth of a Monster or something. And it's this really heartwarming story of this little boy and his little falling apart droid stuck on Tatooine in some similar slave situation. He's abused by the person who's a slave owner who sends him out to scavenge and scrap for scrap and such. And he finds the Rancor egg and it hatches and he proceeds to go every day and feed it and care for it and nurture it. And at the end, the slave owner knows that this kid's up to something. This kid's keeping, you know, holding out on him. And so she forces him to take me where, and he's like, okay, it's over here. I can't hide it from you anymore. Leads her right into the Rancor cave and the Rancor eats her. And it ends with Jabba's barge coming and it sets down and two Ugnaught Gamorrean guards and Bib Fortuna, he comes in and looks at the boy and says, my master offers you sanctuary in his palace. If you will show him your pet. And he walks up, and that's the first time you actually see the Rancor fully. It steps out of the darkness, and the little kid's standing right by it. And Bib Fortuna says, marvelous. And it cuts. And that's the guy. That is the little boy even has a little same headdress that the older fat guy had. And I'm like, you know, those kids listened to a line that Lucas said, and they said, we're going to make a fan film. We're going to make a fan film about the Rancor Keeper.
Or they read the Tales from Jabba's Palace, which had a story of the Rancor Keeper. Much like that. Right. Well, it was the same thing.
It's awesome.
But I'm saying it inspired writers. It inspired comic book artists. It's inspired motion picture. Yes, I'm finishing. Stop. Put the blade down.
I swear. Hold on. Sorry. I'm going to try snapping. He's still there. He's still there. Okay. The snap thing doesn't work.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have gone on a bit long, and Maximilian is about to throw us out of the lounge. The Gentlemen Nerds, by the way, is a Cloak and Dagger production, and it's written by Aaron D'Arrive, Mark Finn, Ben Gibbs, Joseph Fotinos, with additional material provided by Lucky the Rat. That thing is going to stick around, folks. Music composed and performed by the amazingly talented Ben Gibbs, and Red Wedding, Reigns of Castamere drummer was Coldplay member Will Champion. Promotional material, logos, and the Gentleman Nerds mascot created by artistic goddess Michelle Fitzpatrick. The Lobot Lounge bouncer is Maximilian. Our special guest bartender was the Westeros Starbucks, and food provided by Hot Pie. Thank you, Hot Pie. Our sound editor, mixer, and intentional producer is Ben Gibbs. Our executive producer and the man we all pray never gets superpowers is Aaron D'Arrive. Hot 4 Julius Bjornsson is the mountain, and Mark Farnesh is the man in the gorilla suit. Web hosting by Bluehost. Please join us in the Lobot Lounge when next we open, and please always tip your bartenders and your waitstaff. Final words, Mark Finn.
I still am holding out hope that we're going to get an Arya spinoff, and I know that would be cheesy, but I like her character too much, and she was my favorite to follow through this whole thing.
Fair. Aaron D'Arrive?
And I will say that Drogon picked up Dany and started flying off. Lest we forget, the dragons know where Essos is, where the Red Priestesses are, who can raise people from the dead. So, like Mark, I don't think that this is the end of these characters. And also, by the way, please send us the links to all of your Jon Snow and Tormund slash fiction, purely for scientific reasons. We just want to
peruse. In the interest of research. Yes, correct. For research.
Thank you.
Tyrion walks into a brothel with a honeycomb and a jackass. Tyrion says, I need a woman to lay with, for mine has left me. The madam says, whatever for? And what's with the honeycomb and the mule? Tyrion says, my woman found a genie in a bottle. And he granted her three wishes. The first was for a house fit for a queen, so he gave her this damn honeycomb. The second wish was that she have the nicest ass in all the land, and so he gave her this damn donkey. The madam asks, what about the third wish? And Tyrion says, well, she asked the genie to make my cock hang down past my knee. The madam says, well, that's not so bad. And Tyrion says, not so bad. I used to be 6'3". I am your... I'm Joseph Fotinos, ladies and gentlemen, reminding you all that Red Skull lives.
All right. See, this is what you get when you work with professionals, Ben.